happens this year in 2016? I mean, this is it, man. We either go into George Orwell's totalitarianism, where we have an all-centralized, all-powerful, cradle-to-grave government, and there's no turning back. Once that door is shut, it's over. We have an opportunity to change America. We really do. I don't feel up to the job. I don't feel adequate. I don't feel worthy. I'm sure you guys don't feel adequate or worthy. We know we're not special. We're fallible. We're imperfect. So is everybody else in your audience. But guess what? Look around. There's nobody else to get in the game but us. We may feel like we're not worthy. Of course we're not worthy. Why isn't there some great leader coming? There is none. It's up to you and I, you know, a Gideon's band, a remnant, and we can change the direction of America. But it's going to require being filled with the power of the Holy Spirit, a total revolutionary, radical commitment to Jesus Christ, and using your mind like God intended you to use it, which means raise the level of your intelligence and quit thinking like some little immature 9-year-old and learn to use discernment, whether it comes to political candidates or career choices or whatever. We're crying out loud. This is the last year we've got. It's now or never.
And thanks, Paul McGuire, for that. That was Paul McGuire from last night. Folks, this is the Hagmann and Hagmann Report. With us right now is Stan Deo, standeo.com. That's D-E-Y-O, standeo.com. He and Holly Dale have got fantastic books there to prepare. Folks,
Cosmic Conspiracy?
Yes, yes. And certainly his lectures, Stan's lectures on DVD. Visit standeo.com. Bookmark that and certainly go to their store and check that out as well. Tonight he's going to be with us for the remainder of the hour. We're going to be talking about a number of topics, rehashing some of the things that we talked about, but getting a running start before we get to Stan Deo. I just, folks, Block It Pocket. And go to blockitpocket.com. Go to HagmannandHagmann.com. Check out Block It Pocket. How about Health Masters? Healthmasters.com for all of your health needs. And, of course, I mentioned earlier, WholeTonesLive.com. And I would be remiss if I didn't say AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. American-owned, veteran-owned, Christian-owned company, obviously. AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com offers you the lowest cost of foods, long-term survival foods, all things survival related. Having said that, Stan, welcome to tonight's broadcast.
Thank you. Good to be here. We've made it through another week, you know, it seems like we're all intact and reasonably healthy, I guess. So that's a blessing.
Yeah, yeah.
Amen to that.
Yeah, we're sucking air, sitting up, taking nourishment. That's a good thing. So, anyway.
All right. Yes, I suppose so. Lordy. Boy, there are so many things to talk about. This stupid election and caucus stuff is a bit of a joke, especially with the Democrats flipping coins to see who's going to make the difference. You know, I mean, does it really matter when they're that close? They can choose whoever they want to in the caucus, but, or, you know, in the Democratic convention. But anyway, it's a joke.
Yeah, it is. Were you surprised at all by the outcome of Iowa yesterday? And if so, I mean,
yes, a bit.
Okay, all right.
I was. You know, I thought that Trump would you know, rate higher, and Carson would, and you know, I figured that Cruz would be up there, you know, pretty high. But I'm very curious about this thing with Carson saying that the minions of Cruz came over and started telling people that Carson had dropped out, so that they better come over and support him, you know, to push his numbers up. And I don't know if you've heard the resolution of that yet, whether it's been proven beyond what Carson's emails and statements have said. Have you heard anything?
The last thing I heard was they're looking into it or conducting an internal investigation, if you will. I mean, it sounds to me like they're just putting it off, hoping the dust is going to die down, but there's a legitimate inquiry that's being posed out of Joe.
Yeah, were they saying that Cruz or Carson were going to drop out based on those results, which
Carson
tried to get people
target
to act? Okay.
Yeah, by the and Cruz has done other things too, Stan, as you know, and as the people know, with the mailers and such, that kind of unethical, if you will, and getting somewhat in trouble a little bit, at least at the periphery, with the elections board.
And he's also sealed his records.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't heard that. Oh, dear. That's a disappointment. Yeah. It really is.
Well, you know, and he's wearing the banner of Christianity, you know, on this as an armband. And, you know, I don't know, Stan. I mean, to use Christianity as a weapon, as a political weapon, or as Christianity as a weapon, period, or any religion as a weapon, to me is,
I mean,
that's not right.
We see Obama, Hillary, I mean, everybody seems to do it these days.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So.
Oh, yeah, they know from the reaction to, like, Trump and his viewpoint, what a strong pro-reaction has been through the American population, that's the way to go. And even though, you know, Trump doesn't really push his Christianity strongly at all, I doubt there's much there anyway, but... Yeah, and you know, listening to Cruz's, you know, speech after he won the caucus, it was really laced heavy with the Christian statements, which all, you know, sound really good. But when you put it together with all the other stuff he's done behind the scenes and been caught on, that is disappointing, and it's a bad witness.
You said it well, very succinctly. Indeed.
Yeah, who's going to win? Who knows? We'll see what happens in New Hampshire. I'm still trying to figure out whether we're going to have an election. I suppose we will, because I think Obama's got another place to be, rather than be president, a higher order of duty on the planet, as it were. I'm revising my Antichrist list. There was so much to put into it, I couldn't get it ready for this week. I'll try to have it ready by next week, but I'm going to add the Vatican, and I'm going to add Obama in the possibilities and combinations. Now, there, you know, for a long time, I have not really thought that Obama could be, you know, the Antichrist, because there were a number of things that he didn't have under his belt. But once, you know, I started looking at some of the things about his name and obviously the way he's evil. Just, I guess that's the simplest way to say he's just purposely evil, and a number of other things. And I thought, well, okay, so suppose he leaves office, where's he going to go? The United Nations or some global facility? He's been talking about the planetary initiative, you know, the global warming issue, and that conference in France that he went to, you know, instead of going to, you know, where was the French massacre in Paris or whatever. He seems to put real importance on that global warming initiative where all the countries were represented. That seems to me to be a vehicle. Holly and I have talked about it. She's writing part of that in her new book about the 2030 initiative, global initiative. And that is a framework for a global government to come in through the back door by signing this global initiative for, you know, a better planet and more efficient use of the space we've got and resources. So if he goes to that, then you ask yourself, well, okay, how can that affect religion, you know, the planet, you know, faith factors in these nations that are signing that? And you stumble upon a thing when you look into the news and the internet on this Pope Francis. He's a real big proponent of that too. And he and Obama are seeing eye to eye on that. Now, we know the first beast is going to be not only a kingdom, but a guy. It's going to be a kingdom on seven hills, Rome. Now, if you combine the Roman Catholic Church, the Vatican hierarchy, with a leader like Obama, you could have a beast that has a person and an organization merged together. And there's a lot of information on the Vatican in relationship to what the first beast is described as in the not only in Daniel but also in the Book of the Revelation. They're just, you know, look. You've got a pope who says that, you know, if aliens landed on Earth, that they would be allowed to be saved. I put up on the website there on the show images page, which, you know, is normally up there. I put up a link on the front page of Pope Francis' little book of wisdom, why is that important? Remember me talking in the first instance several weeks ago about the Antichrist would have something to do with the name Solomon or wisdom, the wisdom of Solomon. And here we have the simple wisdom of Pope Francis. Now, if you click on the text beneath that picture that I've got there on the top row on the right, see more on the Vatican and prophecy. That'll take you to a subpage of my site. And I've got, you know, first picture there is one I put together with the Pope saying, everyone is welcome, and three flying saucers are overhead there at the Vatican. Kind of puts the message in context. And then you see a news clipping of the Pope overseeing a handshake between a Jewish rabbi and a Muslim, a mullah. And then you see a third picture, not looking too happy, a Jewish guy with his little kippah on his head, reached in to get some kind of an envelope out of his pocket, and he's with Pope Francis as well. It's kind of almost like a reluctant friendship in that picture. This is showing that this Pope is really trying to organize by peaceful methods a global religious order. And Shimon Peres did suggest to him, to the Pope when they met last year, let's get together and form a world religion so we can stop all the conflict. Now that's kind of the organization. Now the Vatican is, as I've said many times, it is a religious model built upon the Roman imperial model at the time that the church was formed and Rome, the political Rome, was dying. And if you look at the Caesar and look at the Pope, they equate to the same thing, the head of an empire. And if you look at the Roman governors in the provinces, you're looking at where the cardinals go out there to the various provinces of the planet. Now, when you think about the 10 toes in the Nebuchadnezzar dream in Daniel, 10 toes, some of iron, some of clay, they are on feet that come from two solid legs of iron, which was the Roman Empire, East and West Empire, strong. And the 10 nations, it says, are of a global government. The entire world will be consumed and organized by the first beast, the Antichrist. That means it's not 10 nations of the European Union or anything small like that. It's got to be 10 global things. And if you look on that subpage, the Vatican thing, you can download this and read it later. But I put seven type pages, with the cover, from my book, The Cosmic Conspiracy. It's appendix number 7, The Club of Rome's 10 Global Regions. Now, I've talked about this before, but this gives you the motivations and objectives of the Club of Rome, development of the world system. It's not just, you know, an Italian thing. It's for a whole global system. This was written in 1978. You can read about it later. But if you look at the picture that's in there of the 10 nations, you know, on that map that I've shown before, you'll notice that if you pick Rome, Italy there, on the little foot coming out in the Mediterranean, that you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, possibly 5, if you count South Africa, 5 of these 10 global regions are west of the Vatican there in Italy. And the other are east, including, you know, Russia, China, and the Asian countries, and, you know, Australia, which is part of the fourth group anyway, or fifth group over on the west. This tells us that whoever sets up the world system could very well use this organization of economies and trade and law and everything, as the Club of Rome report stated in 1978. The interesting point is, the Club of Rome and the Pope are talking together and, you know, very happy with each other about this global model. And you can see it developing in the news stories. This is, we're seeing something develop here that, you know, maybe the Antichrist will have two functions, existences, a guy and an order. That you just see all of this coming together.
Yeah, it's interesting because when I saw Stan, your references, and go to standeo.com, show images page, and you can click through, and you can see what Stan is talking about here. But one of the things that when I saw this earlier, You know, let me preface this by saying, isn't good, the word good, or the state good, the meaning good, isn't that often the enemy of best? What is best? So we substitute good for what's best. And with that, the reason I bring that up is we're looking, I believe, we're looking at a situation where we're accepting, we're forced to accept something that's the lesser of two evils, shall we say. And how this applies to what you're talking about, Stan, is when I was looking through this, I found some references to the documents that you described, but also the documents back in the 1930s by various churches, including the American Lutheran Church in its teaching on the Antichrist. And so what your stuff did was kind of make me or compel me to do additional research. And it was interesting, back in the 30s and into the 50s, they were referencing, hey, wait a minute, maybe the papacy is the seat of the Antichrist. And wouldn't it be something if maybe if the Vatican would mediate the Jerusalem-Israel conflict, which and tie together the various interpretations of Bible prophecy as you're describing. So it seems like you're onto something here.
And, well, yeah, and we're discussing, as we always do, this is not pontificating, this is the way it is, but we're pulling together these facts, and your listeners, you know, boy, I get such good emails back when we do shows on this, and they say, look, have you thought about blah, 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 and here's something to prove what you've said, and, you know, we're getting really good interaction. One of the things about this Prince of the Covenant that leaps out at me is this. Obama has visited with the Pope, and they have a relationship, you know, whether it be cordial or whatever. And if Obama were to take the position at the head of, say, the global initiative, you know, for, you know, solving planet Earth or healing it or whatever, whatever they're going to call this new global order in the end, and he were to do a thing so great and in line with what the Pope wants, that the Pope would make him an honorary or an official cardinal. Because the cardinals of the Catholic Church are called the princes of the church. Now think on that. The Prince of the Covenant.
Wow.
Hey, Stan, have you ever read William Morgan's Secrets of Freemasonry from the 1800s?
I think years ago I did, yes.
Okay. I ask because the way you reference the princes in that book, and it's a book that was written by a man named William Morgan, who was killed for writing that book in the 1800s, exposing the secrets of Freemasonry. In the higher degrees, they refer to the each other as princes, like the princes of Jerusalem,
yes,
and so on.
Yes, yes, I'd forgotten. That's true. And you know that Freemasonry builds all of its mystique, you know, its history and sacredness on Solomon and Solomon's mm-hmm. temple. Wisdom, Solomon, you know, the princes. I mean, we can't find a direct link at this point between the papacy and Freemasonry, but there's probably going to be something in there when whoever, whether it be the Vatican or the prince from, you know, the cardinal group, might be Obama, when somebody wants to rebuild the Temple of Solomon, you know, to bring peace and all the religions can worship together there on the Temple Mount. The Freemasonry has the architectural drawings done, and talking to some high-ranking Freemasons I've done over the last 30 years, in confidence, they do have materials set aside as far as stones and things like that somewhere to rebuild Solomon's Temple. That's not a huge temple. Solomon's Temple is probably only a quarter of the size of Herod's Temple, but it could be done in less than 3.5 years if all this stuff is already done. And we know they've already got temple artifacts being, built and authenticated in Jerusalem and some of the surrounding area there, like the big golden menorah and various other temple artifacts are going to be needed when it's rebuilt. So they're getting ready to rebuild Solomon's Temple in the near future. Someone is going to be in charge of that, whether it be the Vatican or the prince that signs the covenant, or both, and plus the Freemasons. And Adam Weishaupt, who's... Sorry, go on.
Yeah, No, in that context, Stan, it's interesting because doesn't that kind of put together, connect the dots of Obama's Muslim heritage? Even if he's not a Muslim, we'll say, he may appeal to the Islamic element in that capacity that you mentioned. So connecting the dots. So there you go.
Right. That would work. You know, I wrote about this, as many others have since then, and a couple before I wrote my book, The Cosmic Conspiracy. I wrote about Adam Weishaupt, who is credited with being the architect of the Illuminati, which ostensibly has been destroyed for, you know, a long time, but we know different, that it's an underground movement. Now, Adam Weishaupt learned at the Jesuit University in Ingolstadt, Bavaria. Now, the Jesuit are, you know, they've always been a strong arm for the papacy, trying to get the Protestants that have left the faith to come back, you know, sometimes by killing a bunch of them during the Middle Ages. But the Jesuit Pope that we have now is one who would discredit Adam Weishaupt. He says, you know, he was a renegade, and even though he studied at the Jesuit University, at our Jesuit University, he says, he is not someone that the Catholic Church would endorse. Now, Weishaupt built his model on the Jesuit model for going out to the various nations to spread the faith. But Weishaupt was spreading the political faith. What we're going to see, I'm pretty sure, is that this new world order, being based on the Vatican model we have now, will go after the Illuminists, who are, you know, are descendants, if you wish, of Adam Weishaupt politically, and they will be caught and probably executed, or, you know, just locked up or something, by the new world order under the Vatican. So you can say that the Illuminati are going to come down as part of the establishment of this new world order, and when that happens, if it does, those of us who've been saying the Illuminati are behind all this mess will cheer, if we don't know better, saying, the bad guys have gone down. I mean, just, boy, so many of these pieces are on the table and coming together, it's amazing.
Yes, Tim, and you're talking about something that I was chatting with in our chat room earlier, that, you know, it's a very good possibility that the devil can tear down, you know, his systems of power on earth, only to pose as the savior and coming in and saying, you know, he destroyed those systems and bringing in, you know, peaceful, seemingly peaceful solutions.
Yeah, I didn't realize you guys were chatting about that, but yeah, absolutely. And you know, modern Vatican symbols and stuff don't have the dragon or the red dragon, as far as I can find. But Pope Gregory XIII, in 1582 A.D., did cast a coin which has the dragon encircling the sheep's head. You can see it there in the second row, middle picture. It became politically inadvisable to use dragon symbols outside the church, or the Vatican, rather, too widely, because of the connection to the book of the Revelation of John about the red dragon. But the dragon plays into so many of the royal standards through Europe and into England, that you've got to wonder, you know, if that's, is that the Illuminist or is that the Vatican secret code,
or is it under the umbrella of the Jesuit, the larger Jesuit power structure? It could be both, you know.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
And folks, this is good intellectual discussion here. This is great stuff, and certainly, you know, if you have a comment or if you feel you can connect additional dots, definitely correspond with Stan Dale. Stan Dale, via his website. Man, this is good. This is really good.
Hey, you know what, guys? Why? Let's have people that go to that website, to that show images page, download onto their computers and print out or keep all the stuff we talk about here on this Antichrist models and on the Vatican things. I don't care if you download it and keep it. I don't want it to get lost. These are talking points that you're not going to get elsewhere. We don't know how long the Internet's going to be working, you know, or how long we're going to have the freedom to discuss this. So when you hear us say something, or it's on our website, or even the show we're having now and the shows we've had over the last few weeks, download them onto your computer and put them onto a flash drive, or, you know, so they don't get lost, so these things can be spread to people later.
That's a great idea. I love that. And yeah, we can all take part in this exercise. I mean, think of it, folks. Think of this as a classroom, even a classroom like a collegiate classroom where we're discussing these issues. And help the professor and Ginger.
Yeah, yeah. Professors, we're all sitting here trying to figure it out. We're all students, really.
Yeah, exactly.
I stumbled on a video here that Holly passed to me a few years back on Obama. And it's, I think the video is called OMG, you know, is Barack Obama the Antichrist proof, ? It's only about a 4-minute movie, and I'll be putting that up, but the guy goes through the meaning of Barack in Hebrew and Obama again, and the Barack is like flash of lightning, you know, that comes down from the sky, and let's see, Obama and Satan. Okay, when he put through his translation, got everything from, you know, Luke and whatever he was quoting, he said, now look at Luke 10:18, and in English, Luke 10:18 says, and he said unto them, this is, you know, Luke quoting Jesus, I beheld Satan as lightning falling from the heavens, and Satan as Barack Obama from the heavens, from high above. Now, it may be nothing, but, you know, that's really kind of pointing to the fact that Obama and the Vatican and this New World Order may be very closely integrated in what comes.
You know, this is so interesting, because we go back in history and look at Obama. I mean, so many presumptions are made erroneously without the necessary evidence. But, you know, we really don't have any idea who Barry Satoru Barack Obama is beyond what we've been told. But we do know, Stan, I think that we can all agree that he's being heavily controlled by powers that are far beyond him. And he's so controlled, you know, people make fun of him requiring the teleprompter. Well, even talking to a sixth grade classroom back in 2010. But I guess the question no one's asking is who's writing this stuff on the teleprompter? Well, you know, in one case, we had done some investigation and looked and found that, and I have to toss this out here for what it's worth, there's a guy by the name of John Favreau. I don't know whether you ever heard of him. He began his political career in an internship with the Skull and Bones, John Kerry. Okay. And they attended Jesuit Holy Cross Seminary. From there, he went to work for Obama, but was selected on his connections, and more importantly, the Jesuit connections and the 322 Skull and Bones connections. And this goes back to 2004. I said all that to say, I really believe that your research, yeah, you're onto something here, I think. And maybe, you know, maybe we need to widen our scope here a little bit.
I agree with you completely, because yesterday I started looking for the advisors, the guys behind the scenes that we might be able to find out who's telling him what to say on the teleprompter. I mean, Valerie Jarrett is obvious for a lot of things, but I think it goes back before he was even elected. You're looking at a guy that over in Hawaii, where he lived as a student, he was a dope smoker and a lot of other things, according to people that knew him over there. And when you can't find his, or you can't see his transcript from Harvard, and one of his mates, I forget the guy's name, is the head of like the economic arm of the government here or something, he's appointed him, is a terrible accountant, and when he was with HUD or something, he screwed up the accounting for that for 2 years in a row with the IRS. And he was also a classmate of Obama's at Harvard. But when you see all this stuff just vague out there, it's hard to see who's controlling it. But he's obviously not been very serious about his studies. I mean, he's not a genius. And, you know, dope smoking doesn't exactly enhance your brain cells over a period of time, but he was doing that as a student.
Well, the other thing, yeah, exactly, you're exactly right, and I wanted to mention, too, when I was looking, so much, when you look at, folks, standeo.com, look at the show images and look at the material there. One thing that got me, and as you were talking, it reminded me, and I thought, man, I got to make sure I'm talking correctly here. Stan, do you remember, this is when Kerry was, right after Kerry was made Secretary of State, they were negotiating, there was a meeting held between Kerry and Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov. And this is right when Russia was kind of, and the U.S. were kind of bickering. This is after, I think, just after Benghazi. But it's when Putin was getting hacked off at all the shenanigans. Seemingly hacked off, I should say. Anyway, the point I was trying to make is Kerry met with Sergei Lavrov about the Middle East situation. Where would you think that meeting would take place? In Jerusalem, right? Or Tel Aviv or someplace in the Middle East? No. You know where they met? They met in Rome. And why would they do that? So that reminded me, and it was reported in the New York Times. I'm trying to, I don't have my notes when that was, but it was a big meeting anyway between the Israelis, the Palestinian leaders, the European ministers. But why would they meet in Rome? It just kind of didn't seem right. Anyway, I just thought I'd throw that out there. Yeah.
But when we put together the pieces we are at the moment, you know, this jigsaw puzzle on the table, it kind of belongs somewhere in that puzzle.
Yeah, I would think so. And yeah, I mean, your research is just phenomenal about all of this. So, oh, man.
Well, I have to say, you know, I've been helped by some of your listeners who have said to me, I mean, you know, like Solomon, young Prince Solomon. One of your listeners originally said to me, check this guy out, okay? And then another one said, check out Bashar Assad. I'd never thought to look at him. But with these suggestions, you know, people are helping each other. And so I'm kind of coordinating these things and putting them into, you know, a reasonably intelligent tabletop full of jigsaw pieces. But it takes a group of us, not just one guy.
That's true. You know, we're all in this together, and we can certainly help one another get the word out as to, you know, where the perilous people might be, who they might be, and what's behind them. And, you know, we've connected some pretty big dots here. But, you know, I'm just, wow. All right, brother. That's great. That's really great. Well, maybe not.
If somebody emails you, well, before we get off the air with some more questions on this, they can certainly do that, and you can ask the questions. But briefly here, I just want to touch on this flat earth nonsense. If you'll click on that second link there, it takes you over to a subpage about the flat earth. And I thought to myself, you know, okay, they're saying, you know, flat earth proponents are saying that NASA is behind a cover-up and that every picture of a curved earth surface, the space station, everything else, is all doctored by NASA before it's released. And I thought, right, well, what would you guys believe for the oldest proof, photographically, of a curved earth? And the oldest picture I can find was in 1946, I believe it was, of a V-2 rocket that had been captured from the Germans and taken back to, you know, Arizona, where they were doing a test, and at White Sands is where it was. And it was in 1948, and they had a camera on it that was taking still pictures as this missile went up over the Baja in California. And if you look at the four images I've got there, the bottom one in the middle of that bottom row shows these photographs being put together to make a curved Earth picture. Now, I think Paramount Studios even made a news film based on this as well at the time. However, people might say again, this has been doctored. Now, I took one of the photos that wasn't in the composite. I just took it right out of the video that you can see, and you can actually see this video if you click on that link I've got there and read about it so that you can be happy with where I got the information. But if you look at that first image, flat earth, don't think so, and you click on that, you'll see that frame and a line drawn from point to point on the horizon of the earth over Baja, California. And there's, you know, the atmosphere is poorly illustrated there. It fades off into a gray area. But I measured the height of that arc and the width of it in that picture. And using that formula that's there, you can calculate, you know, what the radius, the height and the width of that line and that perpendicular there, what the radius of the planet is. And I explain that, and I put links down there so that you can see where to go to see the video, and that's the original. So then I went to my 3D animation program that I use, Strata Studio, and I built an Earth exactly 3,959 miles of radius, and I put a camera, a 35mm camera, just like they had on the V2, into my model and pointed it at the Baja, which is, you'll see that in the second image, that blue area, and took a picture. And that's the second image. You look at that, you'll see the picture has a yellow line from horizon end to horizon end. And surprise, surprise, it has a height of 18.75 units to 770, just like the original real photograph. And if you look at the third picture, I've laid my image over their image to show you that it's not fake. That's exactly what it would look like if the picture was taken of a round Earth. And we can calculate backwards, as I say, using a standard formula there. So, flat Earth guys, you know, get a life.
Okay. Wow. Well, and we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. What interests me is the references to the polar, polar holes, I guess would be almost making the Earth like a big fat donut, if you will. And you talked about Admiral Byrd, you know, and we talked about those issues as well. I don't know how, if this fits into that, how it does fit, but I just found it interesting to see the reports from, like, you know, the ice cover where there's holes in the South and North Poles. What do you think about that? Relevant or no?
Yeah, well, look, you know, one of the arguments for a flat Earth that I read in researching this week did say, look, that's why there's no more expeditions to the South Pole, because there's, you hit the edge, you know.
And then what?
Yeah. And I thought, oh, give me a break. You know, I do think from my own studies of gravity that either the rest of the entire universe around us is fake, or the rest of the universe and the Earth and the Moon obey spin around an axis, spheroid, and periodically little dents in the north and south poles of these spins, and possibly opening up enough to go to an inner layer, whether it be of Earth or of some other active planet or even stars. You know, Saturn has a dent at both the north and south pole with the hexagonal structures and the clouds that are spinning around their poles. You know, I'm pretty sure that we do have a planet obeying the rules of the rest of the universe, and that periodically our north, at least our north, perhaps our south pole, thin toward the lower layers. But it's only for a short period of time. Now, Admiral Byrd, if he indeed did fly over trees and a warm area at the pole, and, you know, going into a dip and then coming back out, if he did do that, it would fit in with the model that I've got for what causes planets and gravity. And, you know, other arguments they made were, look, the science says that the Earth is shaped like a pear, but obviously it can't be, because we've seen pictures, if you accept the round Earth theory, they don't show any pear shape, so they're lying to us. But people don't realize that this, what they call an oblate spheroid, Earth shape as a pear, is such a small thing that, you know, you're not going to see it in a picture. I mean, we're talking about, you know, just 2 or 3 miles type thing, distension. And you'll get that with anything that has gravity in spin. You'll get a equatorial expansion. And in the case of planets that are in ecliptic planes that are tilted around the sun, you will see occasionally where one side, one hemisphere of the planet is slightly larger than the other one, giving that pear shape. And that's just simply from the way that the planet was seeded by, you know, debris that was orbiting, say, the sun, and a collision of something else came in and hit it. And that will form a lopsided, pear-shaped planet. But the lopsidedness smooths out very rapidly.
Interesting. Now, I've seen some lopsided pear-shaped figures at Walmart, but never mind.
Oh, you poor thing.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I that was mean. I shouldn't say that. No, it's interesting. Okay, so, all right.
Yeah, well, one of these days I'll finish this paper and people will be able to visualize a lot more of what I'm talking about. But the thing that kind of occupies more of my time than this at the moment is the prophetic issue about the rapture. When, you know, and how close are we? And I'm sure you, like many of us, are feeling that something is about to drop on the entire planet. I mean, there's some big event is about to happen. It's just pregnant with something about to happen.
Hmm. Well, and we speak of this all the time, Stan, the feeling that something is going on, something is amiss. There's a spiritual change, I think. And everyone can feel it. It's palpable. And we're seeing these geopolitical changes that are matching up with the prophecies of biblical prophecy. We're seeing everything take place that screaming that we're at the end of days, I believe. So, I mean,
if anybody out there in the listening audience has some positive input on, you know, other facts that might prove, you know, which guy or group or, you know, organization is the first beast, go to the to my show images page for the Antichrist. It's second road down, and it says, who is the Antichrist? Assyrian Solomon of our time. When you go to that subpage, each one of those squares or, you know, blocks of text is paralleled under each of those guys, trying to see whether they exhibit the characteristics that we know the Antichrist should have. Why would he be called the Assyrian, for instance? And if people can look in there and see, maybe I've forgotten a characteristic of what the Antichrist will exhibit, let me know by email about that, and I'll put that into the grid. But, you know, for instance, I have some references there, like Bashar Assad. Does he have any link to, and this is not biblical, but to Nostradamus' pick of Mabus being the name of the Antichrist? Well, for Assad, I say it's not likely yet. I can't see any connection, but someone might be able to fill in the blank there. Or the same for Erdogan, who kind of, you know, I can't see how you get Mabus out of anything to do with him, but still. And what about the Prince of the Covenant? We've covered that here tonight, but there might be more. So just going down through that, people can use this as a guide to communicate with me back and forth about what we need to put in there, or answer some questions that I couldn't figure an answer to for, you know, one or all of these particular Antichrist models. Anyway, it's a group effort, guys. And
I just want to really reaffirm that. Let's collaborate on this, and I mean, do so judiciously. You know, folks, do your own research and submit your findings to Stan as for inclusion. But before you do that, go ahead and take a look at what's already compiled there, so you're not doubling up on research. And let's make this a collaborative effort with sobriety. And let's do this. Let's try to help each other out and help Stan out and contribute to this. I'm sure that Stan could use the input and would welcome that. So this is interesting. Well, wow.
I'm trying to find the name of that guy that I was telling you about that has a video out about Planet X, the ninth, the parallel sun or binary star system, because I listened to his video, and there are a number of things which, from his non-professional point of view, worried me a bit. Even though I know the orbit he quoted is in agreement with my figures as well, for a binary companion for our star, this guy said the current problems we're having with the sun and its effect on our magnetic field of the Earth is due to this, you know, binary star, Planet X, Nibiru, whatever you call it, coming to its perihelion, or its close point, its orbit to the sun, and that it's actually slowing up. It's not going as fast as it should be because its magnetic field is repelling the magnetic field of the sun. Well, here's a problem. the sun's magnetic field is not stable. It, as we've discussed before, it's got a what's called a HALE, H-A-L-E, magnetic cycle of 22 years. Every 11 years, the North and South Pole flip-flop. And they don't do it at the same time. There's a several-week delay between one or the other getting to where it should be. And if you're depending on this binary star coming in and being slowed down by its magnetic field interacting with our suns, that doesn't work because it'd be speeding up, slowing down, as the poles change on the sun. There's just a number of little things like that that bother me. And magnetic fields are much closer to the source than gravitational fields. They don't reach out as far, and we're talking, you know, millions and millions and millions, maybe even a billion miles between that binary star companion he's talking about and our star. So these little details kind of make you challenge some of these reports that say that they've got astronomers and telescopes online doing this kind of stuff that you could never find. You know, the research is not documented well, and certainly some of their conclusions are kind of just scientifically not correct. So challenge these things when you hear them, and don't get panicked. It's so far out there. I mean, the near sun position of this planet at the orbit I was telling you about, if it is there, is so far away. It's not coming down into inside the orbit of, say, Jupiter or Saturn. It's way beyond that. Its closest point is way out there. So, you know, don't look up in the sky. Oh, and look at a sunset. And all these pictures I see, they're saying, ah, I photographed Planet X. And, you know, you look at the picture, they always have to have the sun near the horizon, setting or rising, and they get this double image. They get another sun, and that's Planet X or Nibiru hiding next to our sun. It always has to have a lens looking into a bright light, which creates optical artifacts always. And, you know, they don't look at that. It's not there. Yeah.
Those are sun dogs, right?
Similar. A sun dog is, you'll see left and right of the sun, you will see sometimes a curved rainbow slice, and those are the left and right, you know, sun dogs. But what we're seeing there is like,
that's true.
You take a picture of the sun, and I guarantee if you're looking right at the sun with your camera, you're going to get little spherical sub-sun images up here. It's just a factor of telescopic lenses or even just standard lenses. So I'm sad that people get fooled by this and run off like Henrietta Hen saying the sky is falling, but it's just not there.
Huh. Okay. Yeah, I always have anyone who is so dogmatic about their position with respect to an artifact that like Planet X or Nibiru, and is insistent upon saying, "Look, there it is," and you know, man, that's when I pick up the phone and call you, Stan, and say, "What's going on here?" And we appreciate as an audience listening to your educated research on this. Let me just ask the obvious question then. To your knowledge, do we have any planetary object coming in as a threat to us at any given time here in the near future that we know about or we can authenticate?
Did we lose you, Stan?
Or did Stan just hang up and say, "I'm not doing this anymore"?
I had to check and make sure my cords were plugged in.
Yeah. Did we lose Stan?
Possibly.
Yeah.
Sounds like it.
Are we there?
There we go.
There we go.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. You know, beyond Saturn, beyond Uranus, beyond Neptune, way out there, there is a massive body that it's been known for maybe 100 years, has been pressing on the orbits of these inner massive giant planets we have and causing them to not make a perfect orbit like they should. It's perturbed. perturbing is what the astronomical term it is. It's perturbing the orbit so that it's, in both cases, closer to the sun than it should be for a perfect orbit. So they can calculate, and that's what's happened in the last few weeks. Scientists can calculate where that perturbing large mass is approximately. And at the moment, they can't find pictures of it. It's a big piece of sky you got to look at, and it's a lot of places to look. But generally speaking, they know that they have to look at it at a certain point at the moment and around that that point to try to image this object. The evidence of it is there because of its gravitational influence on these large gas giants in our outer solar system. So, yes, we do have it there, and I don't expect that it will be ever within the orbits of these planets, but it's close enough and massive enough to press on these orbits, and that alone may cause problems in the sun, causing the sun to maybe advance its decay, you know, like change the nuclear chemistry of it eventually, you know, cause more storms on the sun and hence problems on the inner small planets like Earth and Mercury and Venus, Mars. So in that respect, yeah, it could be affecting our weather in this periodic pressing on the whole inner solar system. But don't expect to come, you know, zipping by like in the movies, and you look up and holy cow, there's planet X next to the moon. You know, that's just ridiculous.
Okay. Okay. Well, thanks for that. Okay. Fair enough. Stan, we got about 2 minutes left, actually. I can't believe that hour went by. That hour flew by. So to wrap this up, your research with respect to the Antichrist False Prophet available on standale.com. And folks, let's collaborate on the project. And next week, maybe perhaps we can have some cutting edge information based on the collaborative efforts. And let's do so with sobriety, with a degree of seriousness when we do it.
I've already got three emails in from listeners just since we've been on air since about 7:30. They're starting to contribute already.
Fantastic. Yeah, our audience delivers, man. I'm telling you, we got the best audience in the world. Well, Stan, brother, we love you. We love our time together, and I just want to say thank you for giving up again another hour of your week to grace us with your presence and sharing your great great findings with us. We really appreciate it, brother.
Thank you. I tell you what, when I find stuff like this, sometimes it's hard to wait till Tuesday to share it with folks. It's really incredible.
Well, anytime you have something like this, let us know. We'll bring you on, seriously, because people people are really looking for answers, and this is great.
Yeah.
All right, brother. We're at the end of the program. Right. God bless you, buddy.
God bless you.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Right.
Thanks, Dan.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that'll do it for us tonight. Before we let you go, I do have an announcement, okay? American Survival Wholesale, proud sponsor of Hear the Watchman Conference, is coming up. They want to thank you for your support. They're offering us a very special thank you. And it's this week only, the first 25 people. Now, listen to this, okay? First 25 people to go to hearthewatchman.com and purchase a ticket by Sunday, the 7th of February, they're going to receive a companion ticket courtesy of American Survival Wholesale. You see what I'm saying about American Survival Wholesale? You see about Hear the Watchman? American Survival Wholesale feels that it's that important for you and your guests to attend. So when purchasing your ticket, just enter ASW in the promo code section of the order, and your guests will be admitted free of charge. How about that? Bring a date. Bring your wife. Tell your wife. Tell others. Tell
them your dog.
That's right. Whatever. but certainly, Hear the Watchman Conference. It's gonna be a blast. Go to hearthewatchman.com.
Yes, it is.
American Survival Wholesale, proud sponsor of Hear the Watchman. Oh, by the way, tomorrow I'm going to be on Caravan to Midnight, J.B. Wells, for an hour, and wish them happy anniversary. Caravan to Midnight, 2 years young, 2 years old. Happy anniversary to Caravan to Midnight, J.B. Wells. I'll be spending an hour with them. God bless you. Send them an email saying, happy anniversary. Heard you on Hagman & Hagman. 2 years. So, all right, ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Joe, we have left the building.
This is the Global Star Radio Network.